This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 24. We're going to go over the latest in the Cloud Wars, as well as what's been going on at the latest Build conference. Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Andrew Connell.
And I'm Chris Johnson.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it. All right, here we are, another episode. How are you today, CJ?
Really good, thank you. Really good. Yeah, it's been a crazy busy week. I was off at Build this past week down in San Francisco, which I think we're going to talk about a little bit later on in the show, so I won't spoil the news now.
We're going to try and make this a two-part show. We thought about trying to make this two different episodes, but I think we're going to make it loaded up and try and split two major topics in the same episode, because both are fairly time-sensitive. We want to get this out to all of you dedicated listeners as quick as we can. So aside from Build, anything else been going on with you lately in the last week or two?
It's been more of sort of getting on top of my day job, really, and sort of getting a reins on being back at Microsoft and things. Some news is Jeremy Fake joined my team last Monday, so he spent a day in the office on Monday. And some of our listeners may know Jeremy from his exploits in the SharePoint world. So he spent a day in the office on Monday, and then we went off to Build on Tuesday. So it was a pretty easy first week for him.
Yeah, just throw him out in front of a big audience and make him do a presentation.
Yeah, totally. He loves it.
Well, why not? Throw him to the wolves. Let him actually get in there and start getting some work done right away.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, this week is a bit different. We're going to be both in the office, so it's going to be a little more normal, so to speak.
As normal.
Anyway, so I hear you've got some interesting news this past week.
Yeah, I got a few work things, I guess. I got my MVP renewed for SharePoint Server, which marks a decade of being an MVP, which is kind of
wow.
Yeah, it was I can't remember how many years it was. I believe it was 2 or 3 years for a product called Content Management Server, CMS.
And oh, yeah.
Back in the old days. And then it was when CMS was absorbed by SharePoint to bring the WCM, the Web Content Management feature set, to SharePoint. I was transitioned over to SharePoint and was one of the, I guess there were five CMS MVPs. And then there were at the time only like 35 SharePoint MVPs. So I feel like I'm dating myself quite a bit now, because now we got over 200 or so SharePoint MVPs now. So, and then they're splitting off to 365. So who knows where we are now? But
anyway. Yeah. And so you can add this to your accolade cabinets, because I also hear you you might have been a top influencer recently.
Oh gosh. Yeah. So there's a thing that Harmony does. This one vendor where they do a voting for the top influencers, I guess. And I honestly had forgotten that they do this at every SharePoint conference. And I actually had to be told by some people at the conference just started walking up at the SharePoint conference a couple weeks ago and doing this whole congratulations thing. And I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And it dawned on me why the Harmony people were actually sending me emails the 3 or 4 days leading up to the conference, asking if it was okay that they use my name and some marketing stuff. So it was good that I actually responded to them, I guess. So I was voted number one. I guess it's, I don't know if it's number one in the world or if it's number one in North America, or because I know they're doing it. There's another company that's doing a voting for European influencers. So
yeah,
but
yeah,
it was quite flattering. It was quite flattering. And I guess we all hope that, individually, hopefully it leads to some business. So there you go.
There you go. It's all about publicity.
Yeah. But this week I'm actually in I'm in Southern California this week. I'm teaching Critical Path Training's application developer class, SharePoint 2013 app dev class, which is a new new class of theirs. And I don't think I'm supposed to say who I'm teaching it for, who the private company is, but let's just say that I know something that you're heavily interested in, and I'm heavily interested in, and there's a very significant geek factor involved that is, I'm looking forward to rolling into the office this week.
Nice. Yeah, it'll, it sounds fun.
Yeah.
Sounds really fun.
Yeah. So, one quick little update I'll tell you is that we had a request from one of our listeners, on the podcast, and I heard other podcasts talk about it, and we just had not pursued it, and so we went ahead this time, and we are now available on Stitcher, which is a kind of a podcast like syndication network and directory. So if you go to stitcher.com, you can search for the Microsoft Cloud Show, or just stitcher.com/podcast/Microsoft-Cloud-Show. And you can use that as a way to record or to subscribe to our podcast as well now. So if you're listening to it, I guess it doesn't really make that much of a difference because you're already listening to us.
Yeah. But I think it's kind of a popular app people use for listening to pod shows. So that's cool.
Yeah. So what do you say we just kind of dive right into the content?
Yeah, we've got a lot to get through, so we might as well.
Yeah.
Let's push on.
So the first thing that we were going to talk about in the first half of the show is something that flared up. I think it started about 3 weeks ago, about mid-March. And it's this whole theme that we kind of touch on every once in a while, which is the cloud wars. And we saw that Google went and wanted to make a big splash for what they were doing. And so they really discounted their pricing for their VMs and for their storage, I can't remember what the product name is, but for what their storage offering is as well. And of course, we saw that come out, and what was the next thing we saw? Amazon came right out, and they started doing their big price cut, right?
Yeah. Yep. No, they dropped. I was going to say their pants there, but that's probably inappropriate. It does feel like that though at times, doesn't it? Everybody's out there, you know, dropping things left and right, and so it was huge cuts, right? Absolutely huge.
Yeah, if you look at what Google came out and did, and they announced their numbers, and when I first saw the numbers, it was kind of like I haven't been paying too close attention to how much everything is, but I saw Google's numbers come out, and something kind of caught my eye about their storage, and was like, God, that just seems really cheap. And then you saw Amazon come out and say, well, they're going to do a price cut as well for their S3 storage that was effective on April the 1st. Now, here's the kicker. This is where you can really see how big of a discount that they had to go to meet Google's announcement. They went from charging 8.5 cents per gigabyte. Now, granted, all these numbers are all based. They have different variations of different types of redundant storage. If it's redundant just in the local data center where the data is, or if it's redundant across data centers or geographies. And
It's complicated.
Yeah, so there's a bunch of different stuff, and you get discounts the higher you get. But let's just take the least redundant, so just locally redundant within the same data center, and everything else being equal, Amazon dropped their S3 storage from 8.5 cents per gig to 3 cents. So
wow.
They almost went to like a 30% of what they were charging. They almost knocked like a solid, what would that be, like a 63% or 62% discount on what they were charging people. And it just changed like within 2 days.
Yeah. And I remember we saw that announcement and commented on it, I think, in the last pod show. And we were sort of thinking, well, you know, how many days is it going to be before Azure does the same? And then sure enough, a few days later... Ba-da-ding! Yep, Azure drops their prices big time as well. And so the percentages weren't as large, right? Because they were already priced a little lower, I think. But to sort of come in line, they were dropping prices, you know, like for, you know, blob storage by 65% for locally redundant storage and 44% for globally and things, which is, you know, phenomenally huge numbers when you think about it. But this just goes to show it's a real race to the bottom, right? It's just, it's, it's showing all the signs of being completely commodity, and whoever's going to charge and do it the most efficiently. This is where the rubber really hits the road, though, for all the providers, because it's now not about, you know, just offering the coolest services. Now, now the market's saying, hey, you're all on a par, and now it's about who can do it the most effectively, or efficiently, I should say, and therefore offer it for the cheapest possible price. And so underpinning all of that is whichever provider can offer these services build and provide these services for the lowest COGS or cost of goods means that they'll be able to afford to cut by the most and overall, be the cheapest. So it's going to be interesting because it's not a good space to be in if you're a commodity and racing to the bottom of a price war.
Mm-hmm. No, you look at these numbers where we are at now, and you know, previously we were around 8 or 9 cents a gig, and now we're down to 3 cents a gig. Obviously, I asked the question, and obviously there's the stupid answer is, well, 3 cents, but you know, how much farther can we really go? I mean, they're not going to give it away for free. I mean, maybe somebody will, but they're not going to give it away for free. We've only got 3 cents left to go, but this is ridiculous. I mean, I have a NAS at home that does a backup, has rolling backups throughout the week of different network shares that I have on my NAS that back up to AWS. And the only reason I'm using AWS really is because it's the only of all three of between Google and Microsoft and Amazon, it's the only one that is baked in support. There's no other support for them, and it's a Linux-based NAS, so I have no idea how to get in there and make it work for Azure. But I can't wait to see how much that bill just gets cut. I mean, it should be – I think my last bill I had was somewhere around like $71 or $72 a month, and I'm looking for that to get down, you know, close to $30, if not less than that, the next time I see it. This is just crazy.
So now it's interesting because, you know, everybody's taking each other on the price side of things. But where I think, or what we'll start seeing more and more of, is them trying to differentiate in different ways, right? And I think we started seeing that, well, we've seen that from Azure for a little while, and especially around the news that we'll talk about at Build, where, you know, trying to do a much better job for developers and not just all about price. And because, so, you know, if you continually match everybody, then you've got to start differentiating on something else. So it'll be interesting to see that develop over the next wee while.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, we'll put in, we might as well start to transition a little bit into the Build stuff, because I think that, you know, a lot of the other stuff that we saw around these price war was a lot of announcements that were coming out from specifically from Azure, that it was announcements that you could tell that they were going to make it Build, that they, I guess, announced again at Build. Things like Windows Azure Active Directory, Microsoft Azure Active Directory is now GA in April, and Oracle support went GA as well. And they're the first cloud platform in China and stuff. There's a lot of additional announcements around these price war stuff that Microsoft came out with, but it kind of dovetails into the stuff that came out with Build. What we'll do then is,
I think the only other thing I was going to say is, let's link off to all those notes. Off to all those announcements in the show notes for anybody that wants to take a look. There's some quite interesting articles and details on the price cuts, and also how the various services stack up. So we won't go through all of that now, but we'll link off to that.
Yeah, I agree. We had a significant number of links that you and I have collected here between the first the Amazon cuts, and then the Microsoft cuts. And just keep in mind too, there were not just cuts around storage. I mean, Amazon went through and they did some pretty significant cuts around their virtual machines as well. We'll have a link to a really good, there's a really good article that was referenced in one of these posts that I was reading that did a really good comparison between the different kinds of VMs between both Amazon and Azure. And it's tough to do an apples to apples comparison because they all have a little bit different kind of tweaking of the hardware and stuff. But they did a really good comparison of the pricing and the different offerings and stuff between both Amazon and what Microsoft did. So yeah, we'll have a boatload of references in the notes and everything and comparisons and stuff in the notes for this episode. So if you're listening and you're interested in seeing that, definitely go check out the site. Go look at the podcast entry for this episode, for episode 24, and you'll see a boatload of notes that we'll add in.
Yeah, no, sounds good.
All right.
So build.
Yeah, build. So you were there and I was afar. I was away.
Yeah, it was my first build. So I think the last Microsoft conference that I attended sort of in the build history or annals of history was PDC. And so I haven't actually been to a build until this one. So it was my first one, and it was great. Like really, really interesting from a conference point of view and from a content point of view. And there was a ton announced, tons around Azure and Windows Phone. The sort of the rough kind of outline of how the conference went was there were two keynotes, one on day one and one on day two. And the first day was all about client stuff. So Windows and Windows Phone. And then the second day keynote was all about cloud services. So more on the service and server angle of things. And so that's how they kind of split things up. And I think you watched both of the keynotes, right? Or at least one of them?
No, I watched both of them. I watched both.
Excellent.
Yeah, I was...
Yeah, no, the first one was all, sexy devices and updates to Windows 8 and Windows Phone. And then the second one was all about, getting geeky with the goo, so to speak, with Azure and all that sort of stuff. So
yeah, that was...
It was cool.
Really cool. I was really impressed by it. I tell you, watching what they were talking about on, Tuesday, was the Windows Phone, the Windows updates. And,
yeah,
on one side, I haven't made too much of a secret about it, that I kind of pivoted a bit from the Windows side and switched over and was spent more time in OS X recently. But I kind of sat there watching the keynote and saw the updates that were coming out. And I have to say that it was impressive. It was very nice to see some of the changes that were made, and it was listening to feedback. But I started to kind of have this sense of, like, it's not so much for me a Windows versus an OS X thing, because to me the OS doesn't matter too much to me anymore. Because everything is just all kind of, it's all cloud-based, or everything is moving away from the servers. Everything is just moving up towards the cloud. And I know, I'm not saying that, everything is going to be gone, but what you use for your laptop these days, it really doesn't matter. There's so much coming out of Microsoft now that is so much more friendly to cross-platform stuff. So, the feeling that, not that I was walked away from that from the keynote, but that was kind of a revelation that I had for myself on that first day keynote. But I'll tell you, it wasn't so much about the OS, and that was not a takeaway from the keynote. It was just a revelation I had for myself. But I'll tell you, the one thing that did kind of stick out to me was the improvements or the new devices coming from Nokia. And I guess it was three things on that Tuesday keynote. One, the new Nokia devices look really slick. The 930 specifically, heck, it looks like an iPhone to me, with a nice colorful background.
Great.
Two was Stephen Elop flat out rocks as an executive presenter.
Doesn't he?
Oh my God. I mean, he wasn't looking at slides or anything. He was just, the way he just, you could tell it wasn't scripted. But the way he just ad-lib when he kind of not went after, but he was kind of poked fun at the guy in the front row who had a non-Windows Phone device.
Yeah.
Couldn't tell what he had, but he was trying to take a picture of, Elop, and Elop just kind of poked fun at him. But I'll admit it, man. I found myself wanting a Windows Phone when I saw the Cortana demos.
Oh, I've actually used Cortana, and it is, or she, I should say, is as good in person as is in the demos. It was, it's pretty stunning. I mean, I haven't had an iPhone with Siri on it, so I haven't done a sort of an apples to apples side by side comparison. But even with my mangled accent, she still understood me. And it was pretty funny. I had my friend's phone who works on the phone team, and I said to Cortana, I was like, Cortana, tell Chris he's awesome when he calls me next. And and then so sure enough, when I called my buddy, up pops a little note on the screen as I'm calling through saying, tell Chris he's awesome. That was so funny.
Oh, you can have a lot of fun with that. You grab a hold of somebody else's phone.
Yeah, leave little special notes for them. It'd be priceless. So so you thought Cortana was good. My takeaway feature was the keyboard. So the entire time during that demo, all I was thinking in my head is show the keyboard, show the keyboard, show the keyboard, because I'd had a chance to play around on it, and oh my god, it is good. Like, I mean, I like the Windows Phone keyboard as it is, but if there's one feature that made me want Windows Phone 8.1 more than anything else, it was the keyboard with the swipe stuff.
Now, have you ever used an Android phone?
I haven't owned one, but I've used one. Yeah, so I've borrowed. It's very, very, you know, similar in concept at least to the way the swipe keyboard works on Android.
Okay, yeah, I've seen it. I've never used an Android, but I've seen the swipe keyboard, and I saw the demo, and it looked just like the Android one, but.
It's one of those features you've really got to just trust, you know, you can't think about it too much. You just got to start doing it. And the more you just relax into it and the faster you go, you'd be surprised how inaccurate you can be. And it figures it out. It's incredible. I don't know what the science is behind it, but it's spectacular to use.
Mm. I'll be curious to see that. Yeah. So it was definitely some pretty good improvements on Windows Phone there, from Cortana, the keyboard, and the Nokia devices. I guess on the Windows side, I mean, they talked about a bunch of new improvements that none of them were, none of them seemed like they were announcements, aside from maybe confirmation of things that have been leaking and stuff.
Yeah.
The one that I think was a big deal, which, you know, I know that he's only been on the job for a few weeks, and I know that a lot of things have been in the works and have been planned for a while, or at least Microsoft have been seriously thinking about them. But, you know, Satya, the new CEO, gets a ton of credit for saying, you know, hey, first of all, we pushed out Office for the iPad a couple weeks ago. And then they come around this time and they say, now there is no licensing fee at all for Windows for any device that is 9 inches and smaller. So no, anybody
else? And
that is huge.
That is a huge, huge deal for Android Compete, right? That's massive.
It really is. I mean, that was just, that went right after the bread and butter of what Android has been able to go to for the HTCs and the Samsungs and everything. So that's epic. That's a really bold move.
Well, it does kind of two things, right? It means for the low end devices, they can be even cheaper, right? Because there's no Windows licensing involved. And also, for the higher end devices, it gives the manufacturers a little bit more cushion, you know, a little bit more money to throw in and do stuff with. So, it'll be interesting to see what it means in terms of types of devices and price points. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens next.
Yeah, I am too. I am too. I was really impressed by that move. I'll add in one more thing that it really does, aside from the two that you did, but it really does show that Microsoft is putting a stake in the ground and saying, we're moving forward this. We're not a company that's all about Windows. We're not a company that's all about Office. Like they say, we're mobile first and we're cloud first, which, you know, can you really do two things first at the same time? Or is it just, you know, focus on both? I think I heard a joke on another podcast I listened to, actually by a bunch of Azure support engineers. They said, yeah, now we're cloud first and mobile first. Is that like saying, am I supposed to rush your job while I'm rushing this other job that I'm supposed to be doing in front of your job? But it's where you want to see the company go. So yeah, day one.
Yeah, definitely.
From afar, day one definitely looked good. So
yeah, well, for me, the big killer, other than on the Windows side, at least, other than what I saw on Windows Phone, the big killer on Windows was this crossover of universal apps between Windows Phone and Windows. And that is, you know, personally for me, that's a massive improvement, because, you know, I build my trips for Windows Phone and I build my trips for Windows 8. And they're separate code bases. And for the most part, there is some shared code between them, but not much. And I'm looking forward to being able to build an app with a larger shared code base, and then compiling for both, you know, Windows Phone and Windows 8, and dropping them in the store. And having one store, you know, that's, for me, that's kind of critical, because at the moment I've got users who have to buy apps on both platforms. And ideally I'd like them to be able to buy it once and use it anywhere.
Yeah, you'd like to, you know, maybe buy it for more at once.
Correct.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I want to, there is definitely the economics of this, of not necessarily just giving one away, but yeah, but I think people would be happier with buying something once and then not having to think about it again.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's what the iOS side does. You buy it, you know, you buy an app and you can use it on your phone or on your iPad. I mean, you would like to see that same thing go forward. And if for those people who are also on a Mac, they'd like to be able to use the app as well, but right now they can't. And at least there's nothing that's even kind of, you know, rumored about them being able to do that. But with the universal apps, you do have the three screens, or four screens, I guess, in a sense. You've got the phone, you've got the tablet, you've got the desktop, and the universal app is also going to work in Xbox, if I was not mistaken.
Yeah, I think at some point they're going to open that up. I don't think they're really, talked a lot in depth about that. There were some sessions at Build on building for Xbox, but I think that's a little way down the track, or at least, you know, that means in cloud terms probably only, you know, a couple of months, who knows.
Yeah,
but yeah, there was some content on that at the conference as well.
Ah, cool.
Yeah, huge move.
Yeah, so the next day, is there anything else you want to say about the first day, about Windows and Windows Phone?
Oh, no, there were just so many good little tidbits. I mean, I'm looking forward to the developer preview coming out so I can get 8.1 on my phone and start playing around with Cortana and the keyboard some more, because that'll make a huge difference to me.
Yeah, I found myself kind of going back to my iPhone, just being like, oh, man, I really wish I had that. I don't use Siri on my iPhone. I've tried it a few times, and I'm just like, it doesn't work the way I would like for it to.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how gimmicky these things are, right? Like, they make really good demo fodder, but whether you actually use it day to day, well, you know, I have no idea. I haven't had an 8.1 phone that I can use for any length of time, so I'm not sure if it's going to be super useful. But it will be for things like searching. I imagine searching the web and stuff like that. I can imagine being really useful. But yeah, I mean, stay tuned, I guess.
Yep. Yep. So the next thing that we were going to talk about was, to me, it was the thing that got me absolutely just going. I was just crazy. I was crazy pumped up all day Wednesday, Thursday. Well, gosh, I guess like 4 or 5 days now, just pumped up about where I see Microsoft going with the cloud stuff. Because on Wednesday, I believe, was the keynote for all Azure stuff. And it was also a developer keynote as well, but it was a good 80%, 70% Azure focused. And there were, I was blown away with some of the things that they were doing. I mean, I thought that the talk or the testimonial by the guy that they rolled out, the guy, for anybody who didn't see this. And of course, you can go get, we'll put links up on the site, but you can watch all the keynotes. You can watch all the sessions that were recorded and stuff up on Channel 9. They're all up there right now. Flying from East Coast over here to Los Angeles today, I watched probably like 4 or 5 of the different sessions, watching almost in double speed to try and just, you know, see if there's anything I want to slow it down and watch. But
awesome.
Yeah, the Azure keynote absolutely blew me away. So I want to bust out a few numbers here. There was this one slide that Scott Guthrie showed that I took a screenshot of, and I had to write all this stuff down. And for reference, for all you people who are listening, CJ and I, every show, we put together a bulleted list of a bunch of notes of things we want to talk about. And by far, this note, there's no way we're getting all the way through this. There's so much stuff that's going through. I was trying
so much good stuff.
I was trying to do live tweeting during the for the Cloud Show podcast, for our Twitter handle. I was trying to do live tweeting of a bunch of stuff that was coming out, and I couldn't keep up. I finally was just like, I'm just going to say every other thing. So,
yeah.
All right, get this. These are the metrics here. This blew me away. Over 57% of Fortune 500s today are on Azure. There are over 2 million requests per second for Azure, for resources that are stored in Azure. How many resources are stored? Over 20 trillion objects. I had to do it.
It's almost as big as the U.S. debt.
I was freaking blown. I saw the 20 trillion. I'm like, I saw the T there. I'm like, that usually stands for trillion, right? He said, usually you always see the K, yeah, yeah. You see the M, but it's like, you haven't seen a T very often.
No, that absolutely blew my mind.
That was nuts.
I was sitting back in my seat at the back of the room, and I almost just slid off my chair and went under the row in front of me. I was completely stunned. That is a phenomenal number.
I'll put it to you this way. My daughter was coming home from her pre-K, and right about the same time they walked in is when they put the slide up, and he said 20 trillion. I said, holy something. And my wife yelled up to me. She's like, it's Andrew. I was like, oh, yeah, sorry. I was blown away. Okay, that's not the half. Nice. That's not the half of it. There are over 250,000 active websites in Azure websites today. There are over 350 million people that have been loaded into Azure Active Directory. I'm going to call it Azure Active Directory instead of Windows Azure, because it's the name changed from Windows Azure to Microsoft Azure, which makes a lot of sense. It really is bigger than Windows.
Yeah,
now.
Totally.
So over 300 million Active Directory users, and of those people, here's another big number: over 13 billion authentications per week are happening in Azure.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing. It's amazing. And but also remember that what's going into these statistics is pretty much all authentications against pretty much everything in the Microsoft cloud. So like Office 365, right?
Yep.
When you log into Office 365, you're doing it through Azure AD for the most part, right? And all of those sorts of things. So these all add up to a whole bunch of big numbers.
Yeah. Yeah. The last two that they had, there are over 1 million SQL databases in Azure. So it used to be called SQL Azure. Now it's just called SQL databases. And there's over 1 million developers that have been registered with Visual Studio Online. So
that's a really interesting number, I thought. When I saw that slide, 1 million developers on Visual Studio Online, that's incredible. Like that means, you know, getting access to TFS online and you know, they've also got various subscription options, and we talked through those a little while back. But I thought that was pretty impressive, considering that's a whole bunch of devs.
That, not only is it a whole bunch of devs, that's a really young service to have 1 million people on it.
Well, TFS Preview has been around for quite a long time, remember?
Well, but I mean, what, like maybe 2 years?
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, that's 1 million people are on this after 2 years. That's pretty impressive. With all the existing, it's impressive to me with all the existing TFS on-prem solutions that are out there. So, I mean, that's, you know, that's people saying, you know, we're not going to upgrade, we're just going to migrate up to the cloud. That blew me away a bit. But the other thing that I thought was really good about that keynote, and we'll talk about some of the improvements they had around IaaS and PaaS, but the testimonial, there were two testimonials that they did. One was by the guy that I forget his title, but it was like the technical director for NBC Sports for the Olympics in Sochi. And the testimonial that he did talking about how Azure helped them be able to just scale right away by saying, you know, we only had, you know, one stream for curling at one time and only a certain number of people were watching it. And then it went to the hockey, the U.S. versus Canada, they were streaming it to, like, I think it was, he said something like 17 different streams were going at one time. And they had to ramp that up really, really fast. And they were only able to do that with Azure. And I thought that his testimonial was really good, especially, and he didn't say this in the testimonial, but especially knowing that they used to be using YouTube for this stuff and they pivoted and went over to Azure, left Google and YouTube, switched over to Azure, and were raving about how good that Azure was doing, how much it really was a success to their to the Olympics for them.
Yeah, I mean, if you need a testimonial from a bigger thing, then it's hard to beat the Olympics, right? Yeah. Like it's like, if not one of the, if not the largest, one of the largest sporting events on the planet, and the one of the largest viewerships. Certainly getting up there anyway. I don't know if it's number one, but it's pretty close. And to be able to push all that video through it and serve all of those streams for this, from NBC at least for the US audience, that's an incredible acknowledgement of scale and flexibility.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the one,
you know, the cool one. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say the one comment that he made to just show how big of a deal it is to them is he said, you know, NBC pays $1 billion to the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, for the rights to broadcast the games in the United States, and they have 17 days to recap that cost, and that's it. And if they don't, then they lose money on the Olympics. But they have 17 days to recap that cost with advertising. That's a pretty big
major pucker factor on that one.
I was about to say you and I have been sitting at the blackjack table before, and I've had the pucker factor go, but I've never had something like that go on.
Yeah, you don't want to be bluffing on that one.
No, I don't think so.
Another cool one, another really cool one, more in sort of the gamer realm, was around Titanfall and offloading a ton of computation and interesting sort of back burner tasks to the cloud. And I know this has been sort of pioneered in some other games before Titanfall. I think Halo was another one that's been using Azure to do offloading background computations and things. But that was another one that was really interesting about how they're sort of, you know, letting your console do a whole bunch more of the interesting work and then offloading a whole bunch of the more mundane stuff to computation on the back end. And it was really interesting, like whenever a game gets fired up, there's a new virtual machine or something along those lines that's fired up in Azure to deal with that game and do a whole lot of the computation for it. And it meant that there were things like, you know, you don't get the same sort of advantages being the host for the game anymore and having the lowest ping and all that sort of stuff, and no way to, you know, it cuts out a whole lot of the opportunities to cheat by fiddling with the network along the way and stuff like that. And I just found that really fascinating.
Yeah, I did too. I thought it was really, really cool to see the just the way that they made the game and how it was all based on Titanfall, and how I think that what Scott Goo said, they had 100 million servers that were running on day one, that were 100 million VMs or something like that. They had 100 million servers that were dedicated to Titanfall on day one, on their launch day, when everyone was you know, downloading it, and then they started playing games and stuff really right away.
This is one of the problems with game launches in the past is, you know, in the past you had to have just thousands and thousands of servers for that first day or two of load, and then it all sort of started trickling down from there. And so you need this burst capability in these things, and so it's no surprise that this has happened.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's cool to see the move to seeing the cloud taking over, or having such an improvement or a dependency with games and stuff. So yeah, so a couple other things that we saw that Microsoft was talking about at Build, they had one where this was really cool, where they have a lot of improvements in Visual Studio for interacting with Azure. So things like being able to create, manage, destroy, deploy VMs straight from Visual Studio. The one that I thought was wicked cool was being able to debug an app that's running inside of Visual Studio, inside of a virtual machine hosted in Azure, and doing it live without having to install Visual Studio, which is going to traditionally install the debugger onto the machine. Now, if you're attached to the VM from Visual Studio from your laptop, it'll send the debugger to the VM, provided you're, you know, authenticated and all this kind of stuff, and it sends the debugger over there, and then you can do like live debugging against the VM and take memory dumps and all that kind of stuff while the VM is running and of your applications running the VM.
So handy.
Oh my God.
Like, such a pain in the butt beforehand to do this, and all these different debugging techniques, and they all sucked. You just want to attach to the process and go for it. And finally they're able to do that in a nice, seamless, kind of easy to set up way. It's awesome.
Yeah. And other things that they did too around, like adding auto scale is now in general availability, and the virtual networking stuff, the VPN stuff, the point to site and point to site and site to site V VPNs, those are now general availability, and then the ability to capture a VM as a template and having it capture the VHDs, all the storage drives that are attached to that VM, to be able to spin that back up. I walked away from it. I talked to two or three of my friends that came from Build since they got back, and we're all just kind of looking at each other like, why in the world would you want to spend $3,000 on a laptop right now? If you have a good internet connection, go get one of these super lightweight Ultrabooks and just use the machines in the cloud, because you get a, if you're an MSDN subscriber, you get $150 for free already. You can get a trial from Azure for another $200. If you're a startup, you can get significant discounts under the BizSpark program. Get an Ultrabook, you know, be super lightweight, have a good internet connection, and take advantage of not having to manage your own VMs. I mean, that was just, I was so blown away. I walked away from it just going, I want to get rid of all my VMs local, and I'm going to do everything in the cloud now. I'm already doing a little bit of that, definitely. But I was even more aggressive with it.
Oh yeah, no, it was stunning. It makes being a developer fun, you know, not having to deal with all this stuff. And I thought the chat about Puppet and massive scale and provisioning of VMs was really interesting. More on the sort of the enterprise, you know, management side of the house, but that was a really cool demo, and people should definitely go check the keynote out to see that. I think that was fascinating.
Yeah, there was a good breakout session on Puppet as well. For those of you who aren't familiar with Puppet and Chef, it's essentially think like automation for deployment. So if you need to make a bunch of registry changes or install some stuff or make some configuration changes to VMs, you essentially create, I can't remember what they call it, but it's like a recipe, and you give the recipe to an enterprise like Puppet Master. And then you have a Puppet agent that's running on your VMs. And Azure has support for when you're creating your VMs. You can say, do you want to install the Puppet agent? And when you do this, the agents all, you have to tell it where the master is. And the master's got all the stuff that they're all supposed to do. And when you fire up a new VM, it can just reach out to the master and just build out the machine. So it's similar. Some people may look at this and say, and this is the way I looked at it until I watched the recording from the breakout session. But a lot of people would say, like myself, well, I can do the same thing in PowerShell. I can do all the same kind of stuff using PowerShell. But what's cool about using a tool like Puppet or Chef is that you don't have to write the script to go do all the work. They've already written a module that does all the work. You just have to say, there should be a registry key that has this value, and you give that recipe to Puppet. And if it's not there, then Puppet will go through and add that registry key for you, or it will install, the OneDrive client, or it will install Office or Visual Studio or whatever you want on these different VMs. It will spin all that stuff out. And so then companies don't have to create these templated VMs, these masters that you have to turn on and go, you know, image to all of your different, whenever you create a new VM, you don't have to say, well, go apply this ghost image, this Norton ghost image, like from the old days, right? Now it's...
Build
a new VM, use the template, use the blessed templates from Microsoft, and then go install all this stuff.
And then, you know, for managing VMs on an ongoing basis, it's huge.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. So that was everything I wanted to say about the IaaS stuff. Did you have anything else you wanted to say about IaaS?
No, I think that covers it. That definitely covers it.
Okay. So the next thing, let's touch on the PaaS stuff. So what do you want to say about what are we going to say about the PaaS stuff?
I think there are a lot of announcements, a lot of things coming out of going into general availability, like Traffic Manager and backup support and web jobs. Those weren't new. They were just kind of like transitioning to be, generally available, so to speak. But I think the big one for me was in Windows Azure websites that you get a IP-based SSL cert and five SNI-based certs for free, for no additional cost, I should say. So that was a huge pain point for folks in Windows Azure websites. A bit of a pain to set up, also a bit of a pain to go buy and all that sort of stuff. So that was a huge step up in my mind.
I was surprised that Scott Good did not get more of an applause for that. That is a big reason. SSL has been a really big reason why some companies have not gone to a Windows Azure website and instead have stayed on-prem.
Unless you've lived through some of that pain. I mean, I'm imagining not everybody in the audience is aware of the problems or the pain points that already existed. So I don't know, maybe it was that.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. And there's something too. We just transitioned off talking about the VMs and the IaaS stuff, but this is true for both IaaS and for PaaS. That this is a really big deal for a lot of people that I don't think that it didn't get enough press. And they did a similar thing for this around websites, but around IaaS, what they did is they took the lower level VM sizes. So you have VMs that are sized from an extra small, which is an A0, all the way up to the massive 56 gigabyte VM with 8 cores. That's, an A7. And what they did is they took A0 to, I think it was A4. Yeah, A0 to A4. What they did was they said that we're going to have a new kind of a tier. We have a standard tier, which is what everybody's used to using, but we also are going to have a new one called a basic tier. And what the basic tier is the same kind of a VM, the same size. It's got all the same performance, the same features and everything, except it's cheaper and it's great for developer or for test or for batch kind of stuff usage. But the reason it's cheaper is because you don't get to take advantage of things like auto scale and auto load balancing and auto failover and stuff. So it's great because it's a great way to do developer stuff because you don't care about the load balancing and the auto failover and the auto scaling for developer stuff or for testing, right? You want that for production. Those are production things. The website's got the exact same kind of stuff. The auto backup features for websites, that's in the standard tier. There's a basic tier that's new, that's cheaper. You still get custom domains, no SSL. I don't think you get SSL, but they cut down on a lot of the features, and they give it to you for another lower level offering that's a little bit cheaper. That's great. It's perfect for developers.
Well, that was really list. I think that goes a long way to showing that they're listening to feedback, right? Because one of the big gripes was, hey, even if I'm independent developer wanting to, do my own thing and build up a website, that there's still a reasonable cost, a non-inconsequential cost per month to do that. And you may not have Azure, for example. You may not have MSDN, for example, so you don't get, $150 or $200 worth of credits a month. And so it was still, for sort of indie developers, $20 or $30 or $50 a month is still, that's still a lot of money if they're having to pay for it personally, and that it's not their company. And so I think, listening to that feedback and saying, let's try and add a tier that gives people what they need just to get started, and not all the fancy stuff, but at the lowest cost we can do, I think is huge.
Yep, I agree. That was a great offering. It was a great update.
It'll really attract those folks that are sort of like, well, I really would like to do it on Azure, but because it's going to cost me $50 a month or $30 a month, I'm going to do it on, Heroku or something else.
Yeah, you just have to have a solution to shut down your VMs. Make sure you're not, shut them down for you when you're not using them, right?
Hey, yeah, I hear there's an app for that.
No, there will be an app for that.
there's going to be an app for that, exactly. Yeah.
So last thing that we'll touch on here before we wrap this up, and there was a ton of additional announcements, so I encourage everybody to go take a look at it. We tried to cover a lot of the stuff here. There was a lot of improvements around the mobile space and a lot of improvements around data with Azure. So go check that stuff out. But the other thing that they did that was a huge improvement was they announced a new Azure management portal that is, I'm going to say it's coming out. It's available today. It's in preview mode. It only covers SQL databases and websites. But the improvements that I've seen from it so far are giving me so much more insight into my sites, into my website and the sites that I host in the billing than I ever had before. So I'm putting a blog post together just to kind of share what mine looks like and how customizable and configurable it is. It's a huge improvement from where we were. I mean, I didn't realize how much of an improvement it was. I didn't realize how much of a pain we were in before until I saw where we are now.
Yeah, well, they were jamming so much stuff in the portal. It was getting pretty slow, I don't know if you've used it much with a whole bunch of features added and things, but it would take a while to update and stuff. So it's nice to see this refresh. And it was kind of like when we moved from the old Silverlight-based Azure portal to the new web-based one, and we're all like, wow, how did we survive without this? I think we're going to we're going to do the exact same thing again.
Yeah, and this is a differentiating feature as well. If you're an AWS customer, or if you're not an AWS customer, I can't tell you how much better this new portal is. And honestly, the old portal was better as well, but I can't tell you how much better this new portal is already, just by only covering databases and websites, than what the old portal was, than what we have in AWS. It's very impressive, especially being able to forecast your spend and see how much specific projects are costing you, instead of just seeing how much you just overall what you're spending. It's very, very, very cool. So
yeah, it's going to be glorious, glorious. I think the only other one thing I'd add here at the end here is I was watching the tweets during the keynotes, and I tweeted Mary Jo. She was tweeting up a storm with the news, and I tweeted her and I was like, hey, how come no love for 365, right? For Office 365, they were doing a 365, the new API demo and Azure AD integration. And she replied back, she was like, there's just so much in these damn keynotes and they're going on so long. You know, my fingers are worn to the bone and she can't get the news out fast enough.
I saw one point, so along those lines, I saw somebody at one point saying, damn these 2-hour keynotes. Nobody's paying attention to Guggenheimer, to Scott Googs. I think is what he goes
Steve
by.
Guggenheimer. Yeah.
He said nobody's paying attention to Scott Guggenheimer right now. Everybody's trying to see, you know, when's a good time to get up and race to the restroom because we've been sitting there for way too long.
Yeah, his part of the session was actually really cool. They did a whole bunch of like actual demos of real stuff, and it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Anywho, but yes, there was tons and tons and tons. So I thought that was pretty fun.
Yeah, yeah, great. It was a very good conference. It was very cool to see. I wish I was there, and it was definitely have to think twice about going next year. So, but
hey, well, maybe we'll both make it there next year.
There you go. Hope so. Well, fantastic. So we'll call this one a wrap. That was episode 24, and we will move on and have another show coming out in another week. So good talking to you again, CJ.
Right on. Yeah, likewise.
See you, everybody.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text. We'll record it as a WAV or an MP3 file and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can find us on Facebook searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.